This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Professor Ed Copeland from the University of Nottingham has been giving a talk today on alternative theories of gravity, which is something that I think even among a lot of astronomers causes quite a bit of head scratching. So, Ed, could you describe what these alternative theories of gravity are like and why people pursue them?
Sure, Mark. Maybe first just try and motivate why we might need alternative theories of gravity. The universe is doing something rather weird at the moment if you look at it on very large scales. Weird in that it's expanding. That's not so weird. We expect that, but it's actually expanding ever faster. That is a bit weird because we all know gravity sucks. Right? Gravity slows things down for you, and so you happily accept that the universe is expanding because of the Big Bang, which, you know, we don't understand very well, but we accept that it's providing some initial explosion, some initial energy density, and so we expect the universe to expand but to slow down eventually. But here it's actually going faster and faster, and we don't really know why. And so people have put forward various possibilities. And there is a very straightforward possibility, which is called the cosmological constant, and Einstein introduced that. But in terms of understanding the value that it must have today, it's very difficult. It's from the world of particle physics, which would be where the cosmological constant would naturally come from.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to explain the value it has. And so it's led people to start taking seriously the possibility that maybe on very large scales, the largest scales we can observe, the universe is actually not governed by Einstein's theory of relativity, but by some modification. And it's in that sense that people started looking at modified theories of gravity. They're saying on solar system scales, you know, within the planets that are surrounding us, we know Einstein's theory works very well. On even bigger scales, galaxy scales, it still works very well. But maybe if you go to, you know, much bigger than galactic scales, to the observable universe, what we're beginning to see in this accelerating expansion is actually a manifestation of a change in gravity, and that you need some modification from Einstein.
And would that be something that would replace the idea of dark energy driving the expansion?
Exactly, yeah. It would be, the idea would then be, you'd say, okay, I can now forget about this cosmological constant. I'll set it to zero. Now, that's a whole can of worms in itself, in understanding why it would be zero. But let me set it to zero. All I've got in the universe is the matter that I know and love.
Yeah.
And ideally, maybe, I'll even get rid of the dark matter. Maybe I can modify my gravity theory so not only do I get the expansion of the acceleration of the universe, but I also modify it so I don't need the dark matter. These models that we're looking at don't go quite as far as that. They don't throw out all the dark matter. There are a class of models that do, which I can describe to you, but the ones that I was describing today in the talk primarily aim to replace the cosmological constant, or, as you say, the dark energy, the stuff that's driving the expansion, the acceleration of the universe.
One thing I sometimes wonder about dark energy is, if it is a source of energy and if the universe is ever expanding, is that violating the principle of conservation of energy? Is it like creating energy all over the place?
No, because what you're conserving is the energy momentum tensor, which includes gravity in it. It's called, dark energy is a very poor term for it, in fact, because it's not just got an energy component, it's got a pressure component as well, and they combine in a way that satisfies what's known as energy momentum conservation. The pressure bit gives you the momentum. Remember, at school we're taught energy's conserved and momentum's conserved.
Yeah.
In actual fact, when you make it relativistic, it's energy momentum which is conserved.
Right.
It's the combination, and this satisfies that.
Right. So those theories that you were talking about that don't completely throw out dark matter and dark energy, are they things that come out of sort of taking general relativity as a starting point, or do they come from a completely different direction?
That's a really good question. I mean, some come from a much more general approach. So there's a class of theories called scalar tensor theories. These are theories which have curvatures due to gravity, but also have scalar fields, which are like matter fields present. And they can combine in various ways. And you find limits of these theories, some of which will give you general relativity and others won't. And what we do know is that general relativity is a really good theory.
Yeah.
Right? It really fits the data very well. And so if your theory is so completely different from general relativity that it can't reproduce any of the successes of general relativity, then you're out. Mm-hmm. So in actual fact, even though you have the possibility of being deviating wildly from it, we know we're quite tightly constrained, so that today, when we look on sort of smaller scales, we know we have to look a bit like general relativity because it fits the data so well. It's a data-driven subject, you know, that will be the ultimate test.
That was actually the last thing I was actually going to ask you about, is how are people now going about testing these theories and trying to rule things in or out?
Yeah, it's very early days for this, and in fact some of the other talks at this meeting today were actually about the development of a formalism to try and test these models, because as I said, the deviations can only be quite small. Mm-hmm. And so if you've got small deviations away from general relativity, they're generally quite difficult to determine, especially given all the uncertainties in astronomy and cosmology. You're now adding in this extra one, but there is a formalism being developed. It's called the PPF formalism, post-parameterized Friedmanian formalism. It's the equivalent of what already exists when you want to test general relativity in the solar system. There is already a really well-established formalism which is used by anybody working on pulsars, working on orbits around planets, called the PPN formalism, post-parameterized Newtonian formalism. Okay. And this is the generalization of it, but it's people are still trying to work out how to best do it.
Okay, and within those tight constraints you said, presumably then it's still possible though to come up with theories that may lie within those constraints that reduce or eliminate the need for dark energy and dark matter.
Absolutely, these theories will replace the need for the dark energy, this cosmological constant, through some curvature terms. It'll be that does it. The modified gravity is in that you have extra bits of, if you like, gravity. You have extra curvatures that you include in your underlying theory, and it's their effect that affects the space-time, so that it leads to the apparent acceleration of the universe today. And indeed, that gets rid of the matter bit, the need for the cosmological constant or the dark energy.
Okay. And last of all, do you think those questions about dark matter and dark energy will be solved, say, within a decade or a generation, or are they going to confound us for some time?
Oh, what another good question. I think the dark matter might be. I think the natural mass scales that you expect the dark matter candidates to have are currently almost being probed now. A number are already being ruled out. You know, just for those of your listeners who readily, you know, listen, watch the podcast, the online BBC, for example, you'll see how the Large Hadron Collider is constraining supersymmetry. Supersymmetry provides you with a class of particle physics dark matter candidates. So some of them are already being tightly squeezed. And a lot of observations are abounding these dark matter candidates. So I think within the next 10 years, yes, we will know whether or not we've got dark matter particles there or not. And if we haven't, we need something else. We need to explain the rotation curves of the galaxies. We need to explain the apparent motion of clusters of galaxies. And if you're not going to do it through dark matter, you're going to have to use something else, and maybe modified gravity. Dark energy is not so obvious to me that we'll be able to pin it down. Everything's looking consistent with this cosmological constant. It doesn't look like we need to modify gravity. But then you've got to explain why. I want you to explain, you Mark, to explain to me why the cosmological constant has the value it has.
Why it has the value? Because we have no physical motivation.
It's very difficult, to explain it. People, the natural scale it should have from the world of particle physics is much higher. Mm. Way higher. So much higher that the universe would not have formed structures, in fact.
Right.
So it clearly hasn't got that value. Mm. And so we've suppressed it somehow. We've either hidden it, or we've cancelled it out by, you know, other contributions coming from somewhere. And when you work out the degree of cancellation you require, it's incredible.
So it's hard to believe that they're really this from the same thing, or that you maybe the particle, what they call like the vacuum energy, just isn't the same thing at all.
I'm beginning to wonder whether what's actually happening is that all of those contributions to the vacuum energy really are there. They're there, and but somehow gravity is missing them. So somehow gravity isn't feeling them. It's hidden from them. And there are ways of doing it, whether or not they're very natural, remains to be seen. But a number of us are beginning to work on that.
It seems extraordinary, because I always thought gravity was the inescapable force.
It is the inescapable force, but if you put something in between gravity and the cosmological constant, and that's a scalar field, in fact, that's effectively how it works. What goes on is the gravity interacts with the scalar field. The scalar field evolves in such a way as to keep the cosmological constant at bay. So it is linking indirectly through this extra field, and it's that evolution of the field which kind of absorbs the gravity bit and leaves the cosmological constant as it is, and gravity sort of doesn't realise it's there.
Right.
Yeah. It's a cloak.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
Harry Potter.
And when you think about these things, do you sort of, I don't know, maybe there's a synthesis, but do you come at it from like an angle of particle physics and quantum fields, or from the angle that Einstein originally took of the smooth geometry of relativity, is it something that's...
It's a particle thing for me. That's why I keep banging on about how unnatural it is, because it's at one level, as an astronomer, it's not an issue, right? It's a number. It's one number.
Yeah.
And it's got a value, so it's another parameter that goes alongside the expansion rate of the universe, Hubble's parameter. We don't really try to predict Hubble's parameter very much. You know, it's an observed thing, and we use it to help us determine ages and stuff. But with this, it's different, because we know that there are contributions that will act like this cosmological constant. We know they come from particle physics. So you can't, I think, simply dismiss it as saying it is a number. Underlying all of that, you've got to explain why that number is there. So I think that's where I do come from it, rather than from, as you say, the relativity standpoint of it just being an additional term in Einstein's equations.
Right. Excellent. Oh, that's very, very interesting indeed. Thank you very much for that.
It's a pleasure, Mark. Nice to meet you.